Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Season 7, Episode 39. Steelers coming off a rough loss in Baltimore to the Ravens, 21-14, dropping their record to 4-4, and now it's Cowboys week. And I'm pleased to tell you that we'll have Bob Sturm, who covers the Cowboys, does the pregame show, and he's got a sports talk radio show in Dallas with us later in the show. So we'll get to the specifics of the Cowboys. But, Dave, the Mike Tomlin presser yesterday, and I would say the characterization for me is the injury news was better than expected. The answers to what the offensive game plan were not very comforting.
Yeah, I would agree on both points there. And I guess, boy, I don't know which way to go on this podcast today. The one that we did on Monday, I think most of the reviews have been kind of split. I think some people think too hard on Roethlisberger, not hard enough on Mike Tomlin and the coaching staff, and then the reverse of that as well, too. So, you know, I guess beauty or ugliness is in the eye of the beholder. And, you know, make no mistake about it, the game against the Ravens was a crappy one. I mean, yes, you can take some positives away from the way the defense played, especially against the run. But, you know, the other two phases of the team were absolutely awful. And even though the offense came alive in the fourth quarter, you know, you have to wonder why that didn't happen earlier, and then how much of that success in the fourth quarter was related to the Ravens just saying, hey, you know, I think David DeCastro maybe put it best in one of the quotes that I read from him. They just wanted us to bleed out slowly, you know. So regardless, we'll try to start putting that game in the rearview mirror starting today. Look forward to the Cowboys game and starting with the injury report. Overall, not bad, I don't think. Mike Tomlin started off by saying that Marcus Gilbert with his ankle and defensive end Cameron Hayward with his hamstring suffered no repercussions in that loss to the Ravens. So that's good news. Boy, Gilbert, when you go back through the tape, Gilbert looked like Gilbert. If you ask me, I thought he played a good game. Cameron Hayward, you know, a couple of tackles in that game, probably not back to where he wants to be, but another week, you know, you would expect him to be the Cameron Hayward of old starting this week. Outside of those two, Darius Heyward-Bey, as Mike Tomlin told us after the loss to the Ravens, has a foot sprain. Mike Tomlin said he's being evaluated. He doesn't have anything related to a latest update as of Tuesday. He said.
And then the only thing I would say there, Dave, is that the fact that he didn't update means it's, you know, certainly not a Liz. I don't mean to kind of jump the gun here, but it's not a season-ending injury. Didn't break his foot. Didn't tear his Achilles. Doesn't have a Liz Frank injury. And the fact that he's talking about him in a sense of, you know, we'll see where practice goes. You know, I'd be shocked if he plays this week, but I mean, certainly, you know, it doesn't sound that serious.
Yeah, we got an indication Tuesday. You know, they signed Marcus Tucker to the practice squad. That was a good indication that Darius Heyward-Bey wasn't going to be right this week. And there's a report Wednesday morning as well, too, that DHB is still on crutches, still has that right foot in a boot. So I would be absolutely shocked if he plays against the Cowboys on Sunday. So that should mean Marcus Wheaton should get back to getting a helmet again. Marcus Wheaton has not played since week 5. Was a healthy scratch against the Ravens this past Sunday. Marcus Wheaton has all of 4 catches on the season so far, but look,
one less than DHB.
Yeah, and only 4 more than you and I have.
Right.
Look, anybody that can get on this field and start giving production of players not named Antonio Brown will be great. We'll see if Marcus Wheaton can provide some of that in this game against the Cowboys. I'm sure we're going to talk about the wide receivers later on in this show. In other injury news, Jordan Dangerfield, who sustained a groin injury in the game against the Ravens. Mike Tomlin says he was down on the training table being evaluated, and that he'll know more about him on Wednesday. So we'll see if Dangerfield is able to practice when the injury report comes out later today. The biggest news, and probably the most the positive, I guess, even though Marquise Pouncey reportedly had a surgical procedure done on his dislocated thumb on his right hand, his snapping hand, Mike Tomlin said, and this is a quote from him: "In all likelihood, it's going to table him at the early portions of the week, but we'll have an opportunity. But he'll have an opportunity to practice as we push forward Thursday and Friday, specifically Friday, and we'll see where that participation takes us in terms of game availability." Tomlin was later asked if the thumb injury will affect Pouncey's ability to snap the football moving forward, and Tomlin said he's going to have the ability to snap. We'll give him a couple of days to let it calm down from the procedure. Yeah, we'll see. You never like your center to have issues with the thumb on his snapping thumb, but Ben Roethlisberger during his radio show on Tuesday indicated he kind of expects Pouncey to play through the injury as well. So we'll see. Tomlin indicated that D'Angelo Williams with that knee of his is this evidently has been ongoing for several weeks now. We'll have that knee evaluated today. So people keep your fingers crossed there. And as far as Ben Roethlisberger and his knee goes, Tomlin says there's a good chance he'll be limited some in practice this week. That's not overly surprising, being as really as of today, I think Roethlisberger is what, 22 or 23 days removed from that procedure that he had on his meniscus. And I guess here in a little bit we'll talk about Bud Dupree and Ladarius Green.
Yeah, so the injury news I think pretty good, and it comes back to something that we said. Dangerfield, whatever, he's a guy who has filled in when necessary. He's a special teams player. He along with Sean Davis was playing the wing on the punt coverage unit. Not a huge loss if he's lost for a couple weeks here. They have guys they can turn to play those roles. DHB, again, I'm just, David, kind of crystallized for me one of the things about this offense as we sit at the halfway point of the season in terms of games played is, if you had told me and you Darius Heyward-Bey would be the number two receiver on the Steeler depth chart, number, a starter along with Antonio Brown sometime in August, I think we'd throw our hands up and say, I mean, this thing obviously went off the rails, something fierce. Everybody got hurt, including Antonio Brown. And, you look at it, and just the fact that Darius Heyward-Bey is taking snaps away from Sammy Coates, Marcus Wheaton, and Eli Rogers is mind-blowing. I mean, he's a guy. He's 29 years old. He, as we said on the podcast on Monday, look, he's a decent run blocker. He can run the go route. He's still fast. But he doesn't bring anything to the table in the offense that the other guys can't bring. And the fact that this is not a knock on Darius Heyward-Bey. Good for him for being a great teammate and putting himself in a position to earn more playing time. But it's almost by default that the other guys haven't gotten it done because of injury and a bunch of other things. But, you look at this offense, and this was a theme of the press conference. Mike was kind of continually asked about, the other receivers and what's going on. And this is it. I mean, this is where the Steelers, that 30 points a game, this is where it's not happening. It's not happening, not because of Le'Veon Bell, not because of Antonio Brown, somewhat because of Ben Roethlisberger and his whatever coordination with these other receivers. And, that's the deal. The offensive line hasn't been as good as advertised, but that's really what the deal is in my mind in terms of what's holding this offense back.
Yeah, if he can't get the football to Antonio Brown for 16 yards at a time, nothing happens, right? I mean, you can only dump it off to Le'Veon Bell so many times. And, you know, I think the Ravens went into that game saying, all right, let's double and triple team Antonio Brown. We know our front seven's decent and can probably shut down this run. We know we could probably guard Le'Veon Bell out of the backfield and at least limit the damage that he does as a pass catcher out of the backfield. We'll do that and we'll take our chances from there. And then the Steelers kind of helped him out with their game plan by saying we're going to try to run and we're going to try to protect Ben Roethlisberger most of the game by using some two and three tight ends personnel groupings, and we're going to force Ben Roethlisberger to beat us through the air with guys not named Le'Veon Bell and Antonio Brown, and really, you know, Ben couldn't do that. Say what you will about what Eli Rogers had, you know, later on in that game, but once again, how much of that was related to them just, you know, giving some cushions there and saying, look, just don't drop it up over the top of our heads, which Ben, in Ben's defense, Ben, that touchdown to Antonio Brown was a great ball. I didn't see that one coming. Kind of forced that in there, underneath, I think, two guys at the time. And then the throw to Sammy Coates in the end zone was one that wide receivers have to make, you know, in the NFL, and Sammy Coates didn't. So, you know, not all bad when it comes to Roethlisberger, but obviously the first three quarters, you're banging your head up against the wall. You know, you go back through that game, Dave, and you see how many second and eight and longs and third and eight and longs this team faced, whether it be penalties or ineffectiveness running the football on early downs. It's hard. I don't care who your quarterback is, to continually try to convert those long down and distances when the opposing defense knows, you know, what it's a big knows what you're going to do as well too. So
every day,
I don't know. Mike pretty much reiterated on Tuesday that, you know, they didn't feel panicked at any given time. Because of the way that the defense had played, they thought they were constantly in it. That's why they stuck with their original game plan.
Yeah, and so that was that was the question I asked to open the press conference. You went 10, 11, 12 series, and you gained 70 yards of offense in three quarters, and then because there's a sense of desperation after the block punt, you get 200 plus yards and 14 points. Did you stick with the initial game plan too long? It's hard for me to say the answer is not no, not yes. They stuck with it too long. Dave, I look at it, and Mike, first of all, he said it was a near one score game. Well, a near one score game is a two score game. I mean, he said that, you know, in the press conference two times, and I didn't really like that. I mean, it's either a one score game or it's not a one score game, and a near one score game is not a one score game. I mean, it was 10-0 at the half. So it was never a one-score game in the second half. And then, you know, they got the field goal, which he alluded to, and making it say, you know, okay, and then the punt block. Well, you know, the field goal made it 13-0, so now you're down two touchdowns. There's no other way to characterize that. I mean, you can get a touchdown, two-point conversion, and a field goal, and you get 11 points. So you're down 13-0. You're down two touchdowns, not just two scores. So I just thought he mischaracterized kind of the situation they were in. And you know, I understand that they feel like maybe in the Eagles game and maybe again in the Dolphins game, they got away from the run too early. But that doesn't mean you can't get away from what your initial game plan was in this one because your past mistakes in doing it. Because this clearly wasn't working. I mean, it was, you know, as you said, I think they had one run until Le'Veon Bell's 13 or 14 yard run on the last drive. That was more than 4 yards. That was four yards. There was nothing there. They were playing eight-man fronts, and Brandon Williams was eating up B.J. Finney. They've got a stout front. And as you say, you roll the coverage at A.B., you make sure you know where Le'Veon Bell is, and if Ben's not going to throw it to Eli Rogers, which he should have done the whole game, then it makes it pretty easy to stop. And that was ineptitude that we have not you know, seeing the likes of, you know, for who knows how long, in the entire Mike Tomlin era, for sure.
And they did run some, you know, people think, well, they should have went to no huddle earlier. They did run some kind of hurry up. They just, they just unsuccessful with it, you know, and never found any rhythm whatsoever. And look, when you run on first down and you get 1 or 2 yards, I mean, you want to talk about staying. You can define that game offensively for the Steelers as behind the chains, you know, because
for sure
they stayed behind the chains all game, really, until and really some of that fourth quarter as well too. If you go back, I mean, Ben had to convert some pretty decent third downs, if memory serves me. You know, and thank God he was able to lumber for that touchdown on the scramble. When you saw them go kind of more spread, three wide receivers, that's when the sacks happened later on in the game as well too. And you know, when you stack the penalties on top of everything else, most of them, several of them being unforced, especially on the offensive side of the football. I mean, how do you get an illegal formation? You know, that those kind of things just drive you nuts. I can understand an occasional false start here and there, and then, you know, a holding, because let's face it, there's holding on nearly every play on one side of the football. But it's just the unforced kind of penalties that you see that drive you nuts. And especially when you can't, like I said, you stay behind the chains and you can't run the football on early downs. How many times did they pull David DeCastro? I meant to go back and count that. I know I saw one. Did they just not run the power to the left? Because if there was a way to run on the Ravens in this game, it was to the left side. But I'm trying to rack my brain, go through these sequence of plays in my head, and right now I can only count one, maybe two times that they tried to pull, you know, DeCastro to the left side. So maybe they didn't do enough of that. You know, maybe they just continually try to run, you know, 14 straight constantly.
I didn't see them pull much. I didn't see. You know,
well, what about, you know, we didn't talk about this the other day. What about that pitch out that happened on
a toss sweep? That's what I was just going to call it. On third and two, and they get flagged for a whistle. They run a toss sweep into the boundary that if he had gotten back to the line of scrimmage, it would have been heroic.
Yeah, what a great time for a penalty there, right?
That was the one that helped. That was the one that helped, because it was going to be fourth and six. Because they had the posse over there ready to corral Le'Veon Bell. You know, Dave, I don't know. I don't know how much more there is to assess on the offensive performance. I mean, I don't know how closely you've looked at offensive line play in that game. Certainly, B.J. Finney had his hands full. And on his radio show, Ben made a point of talking about how the loss of Pouncey was big because he's Pouncey, but also he pointed to the head bob repeatedly, saying, you know, just the small difference in the head bob, you know, made the timing a little different. Now, if your offense is predicated on a guy's head bob being timed just perfectly so that everybody's in sync to that effect, that seems a little bit much. You've got to think your offense can overcome that. Now, if your offense fails because the performance of the guy taking the place of Pouncey isn't up to snuff, okay, that there's some understanding in that. But I just can't, I can't believe the head bob is going to be what you're going to point to. He also did say, and certainly it looks the way that, you know, Finney snapped it early on the play where Suggs hit Ben. Villanueva never got out of his stance, and you know, that looks, at least it's confirmed that as you're trying to pick the blame, who was at fault, it was Finney going early, not Villanueva going late.
Not that I'm going to get out here and direct traffic for B.J. Finney, but that's a hell of a chore to come in like that when you know he probably doesn't get a lot of snaps during practice there.
Zero at center, I'm sure. I'm sure he got none.
Well, I would think he'd get some because he's the backup, you know. But how much, and how much with Roethlisberger being limited, you know, that probably was few and far between. And then on top of that, hello, meet Mr. Brandon Williams, a guy who's going to make a ginormous amount of money this next offseason, one of the best young defensive tackles in the league, you know. So that's a tough choice, so there's probably so much to think about there. But B.J. Finney's not the reason why they lost this game by any stretch of the imagination, I don't think. I think Ben had decent amounts of time to throw for the most part. There was just no rhythm, no kind of quick. I think even at halftime, I said, I wrote on Twitter, Jedi Haley needs to use the Force and perhaps maybe a few more quick slants in the second half.
Absolutely. That's exactly the play. And we saw the one to Eli Rogers for 7 yards. That was there all game. I don't understand, you know, and again, I asked Mike about using the middle of the field and, you know, characterizing his three receivers who work on the perimeter. You know, if you don't use Eli Rogers and you don't dress Marcus Wheaton, it's hard to use the middle of the field.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked on the last show, when you're playing a lot of that cover too, you're also going to need a threat to kind of stretch vertically in that area as well too. And, boy, we'll see what happens with Ladarius Green. Mike Tomlin talked about him on Tuesday, said he had a great or a very good week of practice last week, and that, you know, he'll have an opportunity to perhaps contribute against the Cowboys. But how much realistically, when you have a quarterback that's still been limited in practice because of a knee injury, you have a tight end coming back that missed all of the offseason, all of training camp and everything that goes along with that, how much really can we expect out of Ladarius Green? I mean, we can't expect him to come in here and be a 5-6 catch kind of guy a week, right?
Not right off, but I would think, you know, as I said last week on Monday, the goal is to have this guy, you know, in 2 or 3 weeks be a big part of the offense. So he is getting, you know, 5 catches for 80 yards. I expect him to be activated this week. I don't expect him to have, you know, a monster game, but I don't know why he can't come in and contribute.
Yeah, he can come in and look. I mean, you need to start off with the simple stuff. You need to start off with the RPOs. You know, how many catches the last couple of years did Heath Miller have on those RPOs, where depending on how the defense lines up against them, that quick kind of 5-yard release kind of up the middle of the field for 7 yards. You know, that's the kind of stuff that we're not seeing right out of the tight end.
Yeah, the pop pass type thing.
Yeah, you know, the stuff you hit him on the move. Now, we see Jesse – yes, we know Jesse James can go out against zone coverage and sit down for 4 or 5 yards. But how many times have we seen Roethlisberger hit down the seam 7, 8, 9, 12 yards down the field with a player already moving vertically? Remember that play against the Eagles with Eli Rogers, David, right before Eli got hurt? Where he was a busted tackle away maybe from going to the house in that game. That's the kind of stuff we need, but between the numbers on kind of these Y crosses, if you will, that's the kind of stuff that you need to get second level penetration from guys not named Ben Roethlisberger. We need these kind of these, what I like to call the double Dino combinations, you know, where you have the two by one or something, or two by two, where you run the double post, that's the kind of stuff that they need. And Mike Tomlin talked about during his press conference about how they haven't had those chunk plays in the last couple of weeks, and especially against the Ravens. You like it or not, you got to have those explosive plays in some form or fashion, and especially in a tight ball game. And I call it tight because, I mean, the scoreboard said it was tight up until the fourth quarter and that block punt. I mean, the Steelers were never really out of the game, I didn't think, until they had that block punt. Now, was I optimistic about the way the offense was moving the football? Absolutely not. But, I wasn't ready to pin the game recap or anything at that point either. So, you know, I wrote about this the other day as well, too. You know, Antonio Brown after that game, hard to disagree with him. They, you know, need somebody to step up and help him out. And I didn't take it so much as a calling out. And if you did take it as a calling out, so be it, because they do need somebody to help them out moving forward. And look, I know Eli Rogers plays in the slot, but they really need some production out of him, and especially on third downs, David. I think on second and third downs is really where they need the help the most out of Eli Rogers. And then Sammy Coates, in my opinion, right now, he's given us no reason to think that he's not a one-trick pony right now. maybe try some quick slants with him. You know, they started to do those kind of type things with Martavis Bryant with limited success. And for those, David, how much do you, this is a big narrative going on. The Steelers really miss Martavis Bryant. Are you buying or selling that?
No, I don't. I mean, sure. Yeah, I mean, you miss a talented player, but you have guys who are, I don't think Martavis Bryant would be the cure that fixes all ills for this offense right now. Look, I mean, as I mentioned the other day, look, 13, the 13, Ben has two of the 13 lowest QBR ratings of quarterbacks this year. So that's two losses right there. They lose the Landry Jones game against New England. Okay, no big deal. But so they've gotten nothing out of the quarterback position here for three straight weeks in these three losses. And that's got to turn around. I mean, they had the loss in Philadelphia, and we could point to, you know, every aspect of the game, the reason they lost. But it's going to be interesting to see if this team is able to bounce back against the Cowboys, who are a very good team and are playing exceptionally good football right now, just demolished the Cleveland Browns. This will be the challenge. They've been good at home. And if they come out and roll over again, and we certainly don't expect to see a conservative game plan, but if they come out and roll over again, it's going to be, you know, all hell's going to break loose. I mean, it'll make, you know, the reaction to this loss look silly. And Dave, two more things from the Tomlin presser. One is, you know, him suggesting that this conservative game plan was to some degree to protect his quarterback, and Ben saying repeatedly that the game plan would be the same for if Landry Jones had played or if he had played. Well, that's just a fail. I mean, and we can see it in hindsight, so that makes it easy to say, but I still don't see any evidence that Ben was limited in what he could do. Now, there are people who have come back and say, well, look, early on, he's thrown off his back foot and you know, he's making poor throws. Well, he definitely made poor throws, but it wasn't – and I've had some people say arm strength. Well, it wasn't – it's not – he didn't all of a sudden, you know, lose his arm strength. Was it a lack of mental comfort with his knee? That's possible. He didn't suggest that at any point. He didn't say – well, the more – he's never said anything I've seen. The more I got into the game, the better I felt. Or I took a couple hits, and I realized my knee was good. I didn't hear any of that type of conversation. Now, maybe that was actually true, and he just didn't say it. But, you know, that's one. His play early in the game was horrendous in terms of his throwing. So, but the game plan, tailoring it to an injured quarterback, that's where if he's injured, don't play him. If you have to scale it back, now if you're going to scale it back from, you know, 10 to 9 for Ben, fine, but they scale it back from 10 to 2. So, you know, that didn't make sense. And then on the defensive side, when I asked him about, you know, dusting off the exotics in the corner, the defensive back blitzes that we haven't seen a lot of and why the change in philosophy, he said it wasn't a change of philosophy, which, you know, my answer to that is, well, I don't believe it. I mean, you know, we didn't. I think I'm guessing, and I don't know the number, and I'm sure you guys might have it. I'm guessing that half their blitzes of the season might have actually come in that game, or, you know, 25% of their blitzes in that one game.
Well, I guess you know, there's a semantics thing involved here too that we fight all the time with the readers on Steelers Depot, and to hear Keith Butler talk, you know, is it a blitz when you send four? And one of those four is someone other than, you know, an outside linebacker or a defensive lineman. You know, technically, we qualify a blitz as someone that probably not expected to come. You know, even if it's a four-man rush type of thing. Now, Alex is busy charting the defense this week, and I'm sure he'll have updated blitz stats this week. But look, they ran a fire X on the quick hitch to Mike Wallace. You know, and. And, I mean, that was one that definitely jumps out. And they did have Baltimore behind the chains quite a bit in this time. And that's when, you know, Keith Butler likes to send the numbers is when teams are behind the chains. So it would make sense that's why that probably happened. So as far as Ben goes, I like to call it more mechanically flawed than he was physically flawed in this game this past Sunday. Look. If you're trying to be optimistic about this coming week and thinking, well, Ben's first game back from injury is finally behind him, Ben hasn't been overly great in his second game back from injury as well. In the seven games that he's played in his second games back from injury, that's a mouthful to say, Ben is completed 57.5% of his passes, 10 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. And the Steelers are 2-5 in Ben's second games back from injuries during his career.
Let me ask
While I'm thinking about one quick note on Martavis Bryant, I'm not going to sit here and say the Steelers don't miss Martavis Bryant. But as far as deep ball goes, would you believe in, look, you got a small sample size on one of these two guys, obviously. The completion rate on deep ball passes to Sammy Coates is actually higher than it is, not a lot, higher than it is to Martavis Bryant through these two players' careers.
I mean, I think you look at it and say anything you're getting from Sammy Coates, you wouldn't have gotten if Martavis Bryant was here because Sammy Coates wouldn't be on the field. So it just, you know, is it the exact production you get? No, because Sammy Coates hadn't done anything for 3 weeks. So that's a problem. But I think in the first, you know, and look, they just lost their last three games. So maybe you'd say, okay, well, that is the difference. But the point is they've lost these last three games for a variety of reasons, mostly on the offensive side of the ball. One is they played the best team in football in the Patriots. And two is they're missing Cam Hayward and their run defense was terrible. And then in this one, you know all the reasons. I mean, we've just talked about it for you know, too long already. Dave, just about Ben, and, you know, it's a fine line to walk in Pittsburgh when you talk about Ben and you criticize his performance. Because, look, everything Ben's done to this point in his career is in the books, okay? So you can't take it away. Nobody's trying to take it away from him. He's done what he's done. He's been to three Super Bowls. He's won two of them. He's been at times, you know, as good as anybody in the league. He's certainly had those flashes. And I think coming into this season, Ben got more recognition as an elite quarterback than he ever has. You know, when they were talking about the three best quarterbacks in the league, it was Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Ben Roethlisberger, and then it was everybody else. Well, to this point in time, and this isn't me making stuff up. To this point in time, Ben hasn't been one of the three best quarterbacks in the league. And neither has Aaron Rodgers, for that matter. I mean, Tom Brady has. But the best, you know, Ben, if you look at, you know, go through whatever metric you want. QBR is kind of the one I prefer these days. He's ranked 12th in the league. And the thing is, Ben, the level of play hasn't been remotely close to consistent. And this really goes back now to these past couple of years. And look, the Eagles game, everybody lost. Ben was awful. The Dolphins game, the defense, run defense was obviously terrible. You know, everybody lost that game. Ben was awful. In this one, the defense was pretty good. Special teams screwed up a couple times, and Ben was awful for three quarters. I mean, that's not the level of a really good quarterback. You can't go out in three of the seven games you play and play not average. You play poorly, you know, and he has played poorly. There's no other way to put it. So just it doesn't mean he hasn't been a great quarterback. It doesn't mean he isn't a great quarterback. But right now, he's not playing like a great quarterback. And Aaron Rodgers is not playing like a great quarterback. So for these two teams, and the Packers are 4-4. They just lost at home to the Colts, who most people don't perceive as very good. You know, we have to continue. This is what we do in sports. We continually reassess people's performance, and we get to change our opinions as the data changes. And the data is changing right now on Ben. He's got to revert to the Ben Roethlisberger we saw against Kansas City and the Jets when they come back home and play this game, because he didn't get to play that home game against New England. And it's going to be fascinating to see, because one of two storylines is going to play out. Ben's going to play well again, and it's going to be, good gracious, why is he play like the greatest quarterback in football when he plays at home and he plays absolutely terribly on the road? Or he's not going to play well, and we're going to say, you know, that's three straight games Ben Roethlisberger hasn't played well. It's going to be hard for this team to make the playoffs if he doesn't turn that performance around. So just something to pay attention to, you know, coming into this Cowboys game is, you know, really the focus on Ben, him getting the other receivers involved, making the right reads, because I think that's been as much a problem as anything, and then, you know, getting it done.
Do you think he has consistent, you might not, I mean, none of us probably know the answer to this, but do you think he has consistent preparation week in, week out?
That's a very good question that there are people capable of answering. I can't give you a good answer. I will tell you it is pouring here right now, and it has been most of the morning. I'm imagining they're inside. But there was some talk this week about where they were in the facilities and, you know, taking reps. The guy, there were a bunch of people said that Ben had a good week of practice this week coming into the Ravens game. And Jim Wechsel said, I saw him practice. And Jim's there every day paying attention as much as anybody. He and Mark and, you know, a couple other guys are there every day paying attention. And he said when he's in – well, Ben was stinking it up in the first half. He said, I watched him practice. He didn't look good to me throwing the football in practice this week. So even within people who are there watching, you get some, you know, some varied views at times.
But, why don't we hear this before games, or do we? Why don't we hear – it's easy to say after a game's over, right, that –
Well, because these guys are not allowed to comment on what they see in practice unless it's confirmed by a player.
Well, I don't understand why you can make that comment after then, you know, as well, you know.
Well, maybe once the game's played, you know, all restrictions are off. I don't know the answer to that, but I do know he toes that line and Caboli toes that line of so people understand, they are specifically told they cannot comment on what they see in practice unless a player confirms it, and that means, you know, but, in the locker room when you talk to him afterward, did you take reps with the first team? Yes, I took reps.
But isn't that opinionated? I mean, two people could look at the same player and say, boy, I thought he had a great practice, and the other one said, so are you allowed to say a player had a great practice?
No. No, you can't comment on that. You know, I think you should – I don't want to get too tight on the semantics
right,
here.
But you see where I'm coming from here, though yeah. Right? Because the beauty is in the eye of the beholder, right?
For sure. And I'll just say this. Most of the comments that guys are going to make, they're not going to really comment on whether guys are having good or bad practices unless something's egregious, just because, you know, what does one practice tell you? I do think that guys were commenting on Ladarius Green struggling some in practice this past week. And, of course, Mike said he had a great week. So who knows? I guess maybe I'm focused more on, did you get first team reps? Did you take snaps at center? Did you, did he work as the slot receiver? That type of stuff in terms of who was positioned where. Are you going to be the starter on Sunday? So maybe it's more that stuff. I don't know exactly what they're allowed to say in terms of he had a good practice, he had a bad practice.
Yeah. I mean, geez, we could continue on for another 30 minutes here on this topic. But, you know, look.
Hey, by the way, let me get in a little plug for our buddy Craig Oxane. And, you know, we've been saying mortgage rates are as low as the Steelers sack totals. But Steelers sack totals, even though they're last in the league, jumped with the three sacks they got this past week. So we'll go back to the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than spelling Roethlisberger. Which, by the way, if you're not a media member, I'm not sure if you're not writing Ben's name down all the time, I'm not sure that people can just lay that one out there. There's some words that are harder, and I'm sure, Dave, it's second nature to you now. But tell me if I'd like to hear from some of our listeners, if you took pen and paper right now without it in front of you, can you just lay out Roethlisberger? All right. Well, Craig will guide you through the sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you secure the home of your dreams. Even in Baltimore, if you're considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give Craig Oxane a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email him at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or just apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Dave, that's the situation. Bud Dupree is going to practice today. That means the season's over for Sanquez Golson and Ryan Harris and Cody Wallace and, you know, all the other guys. He has now been given the designate to return tag, and the Steelers will have 21 days to activate him. So he's not going to be active this week against the Cowboys, but you know, good week of practice this week, good week of practice next week. Maybe he plays against the Browns. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I don't think he's going to make a huge impact when he does get back right away. And I think Joey Porter said as much during his talk to the media a few weeks ago, I think during the bye there. But look, another body out there, you got to get your former first-round draft pick out there as much as possible, get him up to speed. And look, if this team can make a push in the second half, you know, you could use a guy like him later on in the season. But I think it is going to take Bud Dupree. You know, we'll see if he can get on the field by the game against the Browns. I'd like to hedge my bet a little bit and think maybe the game after that against the Colts would probably be, you know, probably more of a target date when you talk about football conditioning and X's and O's. Because remember, much like Ladarius Green, Bud Dupree missed a lot of practice time prior to the season because he was very, 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 very limited during training camp. Did not play a single snap during the preseason as well, too. So the good thing is he's working his way back. The question is now is how effective can he be once he finally gets on the football field.
Yeah, and it, you know, as I pointed to repeatedly, for Ladarius Green, he's got 4 years of NFL experience. Bud Dupree's got about 14 games of NFL experience. So, and Cinquest Golson has none. So, look, the key here is get these guys back, get them practicing, get them in some games, and hope the Steelers can play well enough to get toward the playoffs so that they are big contributors in weeks 15, 16, 17, and hopefully in the playoffs. So, we'll see where it goes.
You know, Roethlisberger always seems to play. You know, you go by. I wonder if you go back through and look at the games where probably the Steelers were heavy underdogs in. You go back to that game against the Colts last year and stuff. Things where it looks bleak and you don't think the Steelers are going to win the game. Those are the type of games that the Steelers wind up winning. I mean, that's probably why Vegas installed the Steelers as a 3-point favorite at home against the 7-1 Cowboys this week, because it just seems like when things are the darkest at times, that's when they come out gunning and win those type of games, you know. So,
well, and how about this? According to Football Outsiders, Dave, and their DVOA methods, and they try to bring some analytics to this stuff, and there's always some very interesting stuff there. The Steelers have the best win of the season, their win over Kansas City, that blowout win. Kansas City's 21-2 in their last 23 regular season games. And you remember, the Steelers just blew them off the field. Conversely, the loss to the Eagles was the second worst, or the Eagles win was the second highest ranked game by performance so far this season. So the Steelers, and so there you have the bipolar nature of the Steelers. They have been very good, and they've shown that against, you know, the Chiefs and the Jets in those games at home, and they've been awfully bad in a couple of them as well. So we'll see which team shows up for the game on Sunday. And by the way, so we'll come back with Bob Sturm of I think it's 1310 The Ticket in Dallas. You can see his blog on my Twitter feed. Bob does it, and unbelievable. You know, it's very Steelers Depot type stuff in terms of breaking down the Cowboys. Some video and some good analysis breaking down the plays. He does a recap of, you know, much better than my recap for the Steelers each week. So you can check that out, and we'll get right to it with him. Okay, welcome back to part two of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. And of course, every Wednesday we'd like to get somebody covering the opposition. And this week, we're thrilled to be joined by Bob Sturm, who you can hear 12-3 Central Time on The Ticket in Dallas. I can follow him on Twitter this week or throughout time covering the Cowboys at Sports Sturm, Sturm. And you got to check out his blog, and it's very much kind of like the work that Dave and his group do at SteelersDepot.com. Great weekly breakdowns and analysis of the Cowboys. Bob, really pleased to have you on the Terrible Podcast. Thanks for your time.
It's great to be with you guys.
Bob, let's start at kind of 30,000 feet and the Cowboys organization. Obviously, it's been lean times over the past 15 years or so. Jerry Jones, what from the outside we get the perspective of the view that he is a very meddling owner, and that's always a negative term. But he seems like a smart guy. He's obviously been a tremendously successful businessman. He's got a fair amount of charisma. He's got pull in the NFL circles. What's Jerry Jones like?
Well, he's the most pivotal and controversial figure in this area in terms of polarizing opinions, in terms of getting people fired up at times, pressing them horribly because people are convinced you can't win with Jerry Jones as your general manager. And then there are times like this where you just can't believe how either lucky he is or secretive genius. I can't explain it, but the reality is, whether I want to like it or not, and you know, I mean, I don't believe that their process is a great one, but he is about, I think, to win NFL Executive of the Year for the second time in 3 years, which that goes to the best personnel man. That doesn't make any sense to me based on what I've learned over 18 seasons of following them, but here we are, guys. This is crazy.
Yeah. Do you have a personal relationship with him?
Oh, we certainly have interacted on a number of occasions, and I wouldn't say we're tight, but I would say, you know, yes, on some level we you know, visit a couple times a year, I guess, you know.
Okay, so Jason Garrett is the head coach. He's been there a long time. You've got capable coordinators in Scott Linehan and Rod Marinelli. Jason Garrett, what do you think of his capabilities, X's and O's wise?
Well, I think, once again, it's a situation where the weather has changed quite a bit in terms of, you know, after the 2012 season, his second full year, and he had half of 2010 as well. So, you know, we're talking, what, 32, 40 regular season games into his run. I was done. I was fine with letting him go and moving on to the next one. He seemed to be the Jerry Jones type of coach, which means he can work under Jerry Jones' authority. He can not, you know, contradict Jerry. He can play along with the politics that are required to be the Dallas Cowboys head coach for pretty much anyone between Jimmy Johnson and now, with the exception of 4 years of Bill Parcells. And, you know, they stuck with him, and they had a similar 2013, which was similarly disappointing. And then they caught lightning in the bottle in 14, and Jason Garrett got a 5-year extension. And over the course of time, there are definitely times where you can see his merits. He's a very, very intelligent man. He sees football in a certain way. In fact, this whole organization sees football in a certain way. Just to let you know what that is, although you can definitely see it on the field, they are obsessed with the 1990s Dallas Cowboys, as anybody would be who survived that time. They were a dominant physical offensive line with a great running game, with a precise passing game that required a intelligent quarterback who could spread the ball around and put it on the money, and then a opportunistic defense built on speed. And they've been trying to recreate that, and I'll be darned, from 2014 to 2016, with the exception of the unpredictable health of their franchise quarterback, they've actually figured it out in a time, and I don't know that they'll win 3 Super Bowls in 4 years, but in a time where this has become a distinctly passing league, and who knows it better than Steelers guys, that this is a league where 50-50 doesn't exist anymore, and that it's totally normal to throw the ball 40 times in a game. Well, the Cowboys are actually running a offense where they routinely run the ball more than they pass it. Over the last, you know, in 2014, they actually had like a 51-49 run pass, and they won 12 games, and they had a really, really good team. And now they're 2016 through 8 games with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back. They are actually outperforming their 2014 season. So, like I said, I'm running out of explanations for some of the things I'm seeing down here.
Bob, what's the overall health of the team right now? You know, Ronald Leary, I think, banged up there at left guard. Of course, Collins sidelined. Give us a recap of that.
Well, for the most part, they have enjoyed a reasonable amount of health this year. They have missed a few starts from a few key players. Obviously, the biggest one is Tony Romo, which we expected would completely destroy the season. And then they lost Dez Bryant as well, so kind of a replay of 2015, except for the fact that this team did not collapse underneath it. Lyle Collins and Ron Leary, as they've been switched out, of course, and Ron Leary actually looks like he's improved things, especially in the running game. I think Lyle Collins has a higher ceiling, but I don't know that he's reached it yet. As for defensively, they dealt with DeMarcus Lawrence's suspension, and they survived that pretty well. Sean Lee has stayed healthy and has played every single snap of the season, and he is basically the Cowboys version of Ryan Shazier, and a heck of a run and hit linebacker, to say the least. In the secondary, they have started to take on some injuries with Mo Claiborne and Barry Church both out for this game and both out basically for the month of November. But, you know, we're working on a streak where they have not allowed a 100-yard receiver, a 100-yard rusher, and or an opponent to get to 24 points all season. And I would imagine they're on a very, very short list of teams that can say that through eight games. So they've been reasonably healthy. Their defense is good because...
Okay, so you got to hear a little bit of our man Bob Sturm there. And unfortunately, we ran into some technical difficulties, and Bob was expansive in his comments on the Cowboys. So Dave and I will do our best to kind of recap some of what he said. The gist of it being in terms of where we left off, in terms of health, the Cowboys, they're going to be missing two guys in the secondary. Dave, he's talked about Church and who was the other one? I don't
Claiborne, right?
Yeah, Church and Claiborne will be out for the month of November. It's a defense that has played pretty well, plays similarly to what the Steelers would ideally like to do. Now, they're going to play a lot of zone. They'll play a lot of cover three. They'll mix in a little bit of man, but they're going to try and do what the Steelers do in the sense that they want you to take lots of small steps to get down the field, not get beaten with the big play. They're not going to blitz a lot. So that's kind of the oversight of what they're doing defensively. We had a long conversation about Dak Prescott and what he's doing, Dave, and he talked about Prescott not just being Prescott and not taking anything away from Prescott, but it's great offensive play design. It's a great offensive line. They got a really good running back in Ezekiel Elliott, and Prescott has been able to execute the offense perfectly and drawing a lot of parallels to what the Cowboys were able to do in 2014, but with a different quarterback and a different running back. Then it was obviously Romo and DeMarco Murray, and now it's Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. What else did you take on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, you better shut down Ezekiel Elliott early because this team jumps up on you. It really forces you. You know, they're going to shove Elliott down your throat. I mean, this is a Dallas Cowboys team that has averaged over 165 yards per game rushing already this season, and we saw what they did to the Cincinnati Bengals several weeks ago. You know, they jumped on them, and when they jump on teams like that, it really gets you in a guessing game in how to defend Dak Prescott. And you gotta keep that offense off the field, or if you do let them back on the field, they better be chasing you instead of you chasing them. I mean, Elliott's been absolutely fantastic. Anybody that has seen the Cowboys play so far this season behind that offensive line of theirs, I mean, he just hard. It's in your face, you know, kind of football on top of that. So, you know, defensively, I think you hit on it. You know, if you look at the names on their depth chart, a lot of them probably don't stick out on their front four as kind of household names with Crawford and McClain and Mayawa. You know, they really, you know, everybody knows who Sean Lee is, obviously, of course, especially people in Pittsburgh. But
and he Bob did give high praise to Sean Lee, saying he's a lot like Ryan Shazier. And for people thinking about Ryan Shazier, maybe Sean Lee's a good parallel, because you know, from 2012 through 2014, I think Bob said it was roughly, you know, forgive me on the exact numbers, but you know, he played 18 or 20 of 47 games. And that, you know, we're not looking at numbers quite that extreme for Ryan Shazier, but pretty damn close, and thinking about what kind of player he is. And obviously Sean Lee been able to stay on the field the past 2 years and be an incredibly impactful player. And as Dave and I discuss, you know, what do you do with the fifth year option on Ryan Shazier going forward? This is the, you know, maybe that's the parallel that you want to draw.
Yeah, absolutely. Sean Lee, when he's on the field, he's fantastic, right? And we've said the same thing about Ryan Shazier as well, too. Going to be interesting to see how their secondary is this week. If you're going to exploit them, probably going to be through the air with Church and Claiborne banged up. So, you know, I think the Steelers can have moderate success running the football against the Cowboys, but if they're not staying ahead of the chains and they're getting themselves again in third and, you know, second and long and third and long situations and kind of letting the defense know and be able to send guys after them, that, you know, That's going to be problems. I think you really got to look hard and deep at the secondary and find ways to attack them without them having potentially Claiborne and Church in this lineup. So
we didn't
even talk about Byron Jones either, did we, Harley? The free safety back there, that kid out of UConn who had great measurables at the combine and all, and really is fitting in decent, with the move to safety.
Yes, and on the other side, in terms of how the Steelers deal with the Cowboys offense, you've got a fantastic offensive line. He talked about kind of hitting on every one of these number one picks, and say, maybe Doug Free at right tackle, the veteran, is maybe the weak link here. But they've got. Tyron Smith, Travis Frederick, and Zach Martin, kind of first round picks at 11 and 13 and 14. This is the best offensive line, I think, in football. And it's been very difficult for teams to get at Dak Prescott because their protection is so good that they haven't been successful blitzing. And of course, Dak Prescott's incredibly mobile. And you watch some of the play design, some of the misdirection that the Cowboys will run. Some of the play action they will run, having Dak rollouts, fake running left with Elliott, which you've got to respect because of the line and because of Elliott. And then he rolls right with a underneath guy, and then typically Jason Witten or a wide receiver running the deeper route. That is a staple of their offense that we would expect to see coming up Sunday multiple times. And so we got into Bob was also pointing out, again, and drawing all the parallels to the early 90 teams and the 2014 team. This Cowboy team this year has yet to give up a 100-yard receiver, a 100-yard rusher, or 24 points a game. And when we pressed him at the end as to, what do you think happens, he said he's a big believer in home field advantage, but this type of offense the Cowboys have travels well. They were 8-0 on the road in 2014. This is a similar style. He thought they might run into trouble in Lambeau on that Sunday night game or Sunday afternoon game. I can't remember which it was, but I did as well. They didn't. They took care of the Packers in Lambeau. So he said he felt like the 3 points was probably worth taking with the Cowboys in a close game, but maybe a little bit higher scoring in terms of what would happen Sunday at 4:25. So, Dave, I think we've covered kind of most of it. The Romo situation, we asked him about Romo and what would happen if, the Steelers had a really good game and Dak didn't play well for a game or two. What would the temperature be in Dallas about having Romo come back in? And he said, well, it doesn't matter much because it's going to be Jerry Jones' decision and probably only Jerry Jones involved in the decision, maybe not even the head coach having a voice in that. And he said, that's what everybody's kind of, not waiting to see necessarily, but that is the big question. If that happens, how will that go? So Bob was great. He was expansive. You can follow him on Twitter at SportsSturm, S-T-U-R-M, and he's got a bunch of really good blog posts recapping the Cowboy games that have been played so far, obviously. So I highly recommend checking that out.
Yeah, David, hopefully you'll have him on your show later on this week as well, too, because he really was a good guest. And you can put this snafu entirely on my shoulders. I had a problem with my earphones there. So once again, I apologize for the technical difficulties for sure, but make sure you get over and read his work over there on the site that David mentioned. There'll be a link in the post on the podcast when I post this. And like I said, hopefully David can have him on his show later on in the week on ESPN 970 as well too, because really is knowledgeable about what's the inner workings with the Dallas Cowboys.
Dave, let's hit on one other thing. Alex put a post up, and I think this goes back. I think Tim Benz had a conversation in the locker room with Sean Davis about the punt block, and we talked about it. It seems somewhat inexplicable that Golden and Davis would kind of communicate before the snap. And this is one of the things when you have to punt the ball 9 straight times, other teams get to see things repeatedly that you might not notice if you only had to punt 3 times in a game. But the Steelers were punting on every series, basically, and the guy who blocked the punt said he noticed that maybe they weren't blocking him. Well, Davis would occasionally release. On the other side, Dangerfield would occasionally release. It looked like Davis was told to release. He nodded his head. imperceptibly almost, but Golden communicates with him, and then kind of so he releases, and Golden doesn't look at that side once. He fills the A gap. There's no pressure on the other side. There's really no pressure up the A gap. So there's a miscommunication, and Sean Davis has more or less exonerated himself. Mike Tomlin didn't throw him under the bus yesterday. So, you know, there's only one suspect left in the case, detective. And I would suggest maybe Robert Golden made the call, and either they misunderstood each other, or Golden made the call and then didn't react to the call the way Sean Davis did.
Yeah, how many times did we hear the word miscommunication in the last few days, especially from Tomlin on Tuesday there? So, yeah, look, maybe Golden had thought, well, this guy seems to run with Davis every time he releases. Maybe I'm going to roll the dice and guess he's going to go again, and I'm going to pinch inside here, you know, to help. Yeah, I think you just hit on a very good point there. When you punt as many times as the Steelers did in that game, it gives the opposition a lot of film to look at, doesn't it?
And that's really what it is, right?
Yeah, and you know the kid Allen went to his coach and said something there, and you know they made maybe one change there and went hard and heavy. When Sean Davis did, you know, go up the field on that one on the punt block there, so. Boy, what a mess. And I don't think I've heard Robert Golden talk about this. Have you?
I have not.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear what he has to say about it as well, too. But all we can say is there was a miscommunication, and that one ended up being the difference in the game as things turned out in the long run there. So, all right, David, once again, apologies to our listeners for that corrupted interview there with Bob. Appreciate having him on. Hopefully, as I said, David will have him on his show later on in the week. You can follow me on Twitter and yell at
me. Let's give our boy Craig a little love, because I think we might have lost that in the process as well. Of course, you've been hearing about mortgage rates being at or near all-time lows. And if you're looking to upgrade or downsize or buy your first home or invest or purchase a vacation home or just refinance, call our buddy Craig Octane at First Advantage Mortgage, lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's a nationally recognized lender who'd love the opportunity to help out podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or you can email him at craig@blackandgoldlending.com, or just go online and go to www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender.
All right, folks, you can follow me on Twitter and yell at me today for ruining this interview at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you have any ideas of some reliable headphones I should use, pass those along to me as well, too, so maybe I'll stop having some of these problems. David, I appreciate it. I apologize to you as well.
No worries. As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.